you just heard wasn't midnight at New Year's Eve turning into New Year's Day. Rather, it was 11 p.m. on January 31st UK time, midnight Central European time on February 1st, where it was in Brussels. The United Kingdom and all four countries in it, including two who voted to remain as part of the June 2016 referendum to stay within or leave the European Union, were officially out of the European Union. One of those countries who voted to remain was Northern Ireland, who will be the only UK country to have a land border with the EU, thanks to the Republic of Ireland's continued relationship within the EU, as well as accommodations from the Good Friday Agreement in 1998 between both North and South. All of that could be in jeopardy, however, as we enter 2021, as it could affect the fast-rising market in both countries, games development, as well as social interactivity between the two countries' development communities. Events like the recent Run for the Border could become more difficult to hold thanks to border logistics. Funding for games and development could, in all likelihood will, be affected. So how does one of the fastest rising development sectors circumvent these things? What next in light of such political chaos, not just with Brexit, but with recent events in the Free State and in the North? And what does the future hold for the Irish games sector as a whole? Say the least of a pandemic hitting our front door. For Play Diaries, this is Press Play. I'm Johnny Cullum. Let's start. Dear sweet Jesus Christ, it's cold. Why does one of the jewelry stores still have their Christmas decorations up? Oh, good God. Coming up on the far street now, where I meet Noxy. Head to Dundalk. It's January 17th. 2 weeks before the UK leaves the EU, and months before shit really hits the fan. I'm on my way from my home in Derry, Northern Ireland, literally 4 days after launching Play Diaries, for a 3-hour trip across the border to the Republic of Ireland. Depending which way you're going from in Derry, you could be heading across into the border into Bridgend in County Donegal within 15 to 20 minutes, or in Lifford, also in Donegal, within 45 minutes if you head via the town of Strabane in County Tyrone. However, for this adventure, we're having to go through Belfast.
Alright, how are you?
Alright.
It's Johnny.
Alright.
Arthur.
Welcome,
so,
welcome.
We're written on Latina and Jordan here. How do we want to arrange this?
I'm heading to County Dundalk for Run for the Border, a meet-up between the Irish game development communities in both countries. Hightail developer Hypixel graciously give me a seat in their car to let me crash with them to Run for the Border.
Just there? Ah, no worries.
That's just convenient for me, to be honest.
No worries, Johnny, that's not a problem.
Run for the Border is situated as close as possible between the two borders, with a majority of southern-based developers meeting from Dublin and the majority of the northern-based developers meeting from Belfast, with the exception of the aforementioned fringe group coming in on the Derry ferry. Heading to the event on the outskirts of County Dundalk, free buses. The event is a night where developers from both countries come together, socialise a wee bit, have a few drinks, eat a few slices of pizza, and watch a few presentations from developers there on the night. Even at an event about games, there's a metagame happening. No, the irony is not lost on me either. When you enter the venue, you're handed a random assortment of cards that reference pop culture series. The Marvel films, Star Wars, Harry Potter, etc, etc, etc. In an effort to encourage socialising, you're nudged to swap cards and gather sets of cards belonging to either certain series or certain colours even. The first person at a table who presents what's been asked of them at random intervals correctly and makes it to the stage before anyone else wins drinks tokens. Simple as that.
Wait a moment, let me throw another one of these out there. All right. Okay. Oh, what's he got?
So
somebody give me a
All right, one. Here's what I want. For this one, I want 7 different green ones. One from each side. Go, 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 go. 7 different green ones.
Mickey, Mickey.
Soon afterwards, we're introduced to our MCs for the evening, Demon Rook of Irish Games Body Imrit and Kevin Beamers of Games and I. You'll hear me speak to Beamers in a little bit.
Run for the border 2020. Just wanted to welcome you all for coming, and we're just excited to have this get together. And I'm Denman, I'm on the board of Imrit, and here we go. Oh, it says I'm the chair. I'm not really the chair, I'm just one of the board members, but that's fine.
Yeah, the fact that I put chair in here shows how little we communicated on the way up to this, which is exactly the opposite of the point of this event. Right, so, how many people came to this last year?
Woo!
That's pretty good. Why didn't you sign up earlier? It killed us trying to get these tickets sold. No, we had a great turnout. It's probably about the same number of people we had out here last year. It was, then it would have been, Stephen was up here with Elaine. As you know, okay, I'm from Games and I, you're from Imrit. So it's a joint operation between the two, what would you call Imrit as a unit,
it's an association for game workers in Ireland.
Okay, we're kind of an industry trade buddy. The language is a little bit fuzzy, but what we like to do is bring game developers together. Developers usually of the same community get together, but this event is about the two communities meeting together in a mutually inconvenient place.
Taking place at the Spirit Store in Dundalk, this is the second time Run for the Border has been organised between the two countries' dev communities. The first one just happened last year.
My name is Kevin Beamers. I am the current chair of Games NI, but this is my last event in that role. I'll still be kicking around though. I am the CEO of Italic Pig, and one of the spearheads of Run for the Border. Run for the Border, started up last year. Last year was our first one. This is our second. The mentality behind it was that we all became aware that the Northern Irish and the Republic of Ireland rarely get together on the island. We might go to San Francisco and bump into a few familiar faces at GDC, might do the same thing at Gamescom, but in terms of the North going down to State of Play, or the South coming up to the Belfast Media Festival, there's not a lot of transfer there. It's almost like it's just a little bit too far away to spend a day on it. You save your money for another bigger event. So we thought, if we could get the two teams together, we're so close, it's a 2-hour drive, there might be partnerships, there might be ways that different funds could be used against each other. There's a lot of animation companies that do this sort of thing. So Run for the Border, we thought if we could get two coaches, one from Belfast City Centre, one from Dublin City Centre, and get them to meet on the border in the town of Dundalk. We just thought there was a humor to it. There was an irreverence to it. It was exactly the sort of thing that the two Irish groups would embrace, and they have. It's fantastic. I love the turnout here.
My name is Vicky Potts, and I am from White Potts Studios from Belfast.
Potts was also part of Games NI at the time of Run for the Border, but I was unable to catch up with her during the event. And any chance to do a catch-up post-event was one scarred by the ongoing coronavirus pandemic, We'll reference that a few times during this episode. And two, she had a week-long stay in hospital thanks to a kidney infection. It's only several months after the event that I'm finally able to speak to her.
So the general vibe at Run for the Border, like, it's really, they've got that kind of friendly, you know, everyone's really excited to see each other type thing. When you arrive, you get these unrelated sort of trading cards almost, so it'll be like different names from different games or TV shows, and you have to sort of swap with other people to try and collect all of the same set. And it's got that sort of feel when you're, you know, starting like a new year at school or whatever, and you're trying to find someone to trade Pokemon cards with in the playground. It's like a really good way to sort of, it's so typical for a games event as well. It's got really, it's, yeah, it's good, it's fun, it's friendly.
The game dev sector is already gaining traction, particularly from the south. League of Legends developer Riot Games has a significant presence there, as does Divinity Original Sin and Baldur's Gate 3 developer Larian Studios in Dublin, as well as Empire Sin Studio Romero Games, headed up by the legendary pairing of Brenda and John Romero, who moved from the US and established a team in Galway. That's in addition to presences in Dublin, Galway and Cork of the likes of EA and Blizzard, although those teams are primarily customer service teams, with the former dealing with BioWare and Star Wars The Old Republic. The first speaker of the night at Run for the Border, after the introductions are done and finished, is Romero Games' Manuel Correa on making and publishing your own board game.
For you. If you had a great idea for a board game, you made a prototype, you tested it, you iterated on it, and now you feel that you finally have something that you're ready to present to the world. If all you have is an idea that is good too, but I'm not sure if all of this is going to apply except for the very end. So, what is your goal in this? If your goal is to make money, I'm sorry. No one is making money off of board games. The guy who designed Magic the Gathering doesn't get royalties from that. Most people that design board games do it as a side gig, and they have a regular day job. The few people that I know that do board game design full-time, have done it for 14 years before that. So maybe in 4 years.
There's no such major game development presence in Northern Ireland, though. But look very closely, and there's something on the horizon for its development community that has the potential of being something very, very special. At the risk of hyperbole, Paleo Pines is set to become the biggest game to come out of Northern Ireland to date. It is also a matter of fact, though. Paleo Pines is the biggest games production deal to come out of Northern Ireland ever. Made by Belfast-based Italic Pig, Paleo Pines is a mix of life simulator crossed with management. The kicker is, you're basically looking after dinosaurs. In a sense, it's Jurassic Park, or rather specifically Frontier's Jurassic World Evolution, crossed with Animal Crossing or Slime Rancher. But how it came into existence is something of a wild story.
As you know, I've sort of been like a lifelong dinosaur enthusiast nerd, sort of like, I have them tattooed on my body, so it's kind of my thing for a long time. Whenever I was in uni, I did a project about an animated TV show about like a girl with a pet dinosaur. So it was just kind of like all that stuff sort of built up to it.
That's Jordan Bradley, creative director on Paleo Pines and concept artist at Italic Pig.
More specifically, in the Game Jam of 2019, around about that time, I'd been playing a lot of Animal Crossing and Jurassic World Evolution, like those sort of games. And I'm a big fan of those games, but they weren't really scratching an itch that I had. You know, I wanted to play a game that didn't exist, basically. And so I just started thinking, like, well, if I were to make a game that had dinosaurs and management and exploration, like, how would I do it? And I started doing little doodles, and it really didn't take off much more from there until Game Jam came around, and I thought, well, I have this idea, may as well go there, it's an excuse to actually put pen to paper. So we went, took it real easy, me and my buddy went, got some drinks, got some snacks, and we just kind of worked on it, had a little art jam, and at the end of it we had some character concepts and a dinosaur model, and we posted that to Twitter, expecting maybe, you know, like, oh, we'll get 50 likes because it is the Game Jam hashtag. So we put that out, and the likes started rolling in, dozens, then hundreds, then thousands, and then we were just completely floored, not expecting any sort of reaction at all like that. People sort of like screaming in the comments, like, I need this game, I want to play it, I hope it gets made, and where can we fund it, and all this. And at this point, that wasn't even a thought that crossed our mind. We were just, you know, we were having fun and messing around with a hypothetical sort of thing. So to say we were overwhelmed is an understatement. Yeah, like, we were just completely taken aback, and that's when we started putting our serious caps on. We're like, okay, if this was real, should we bring it and talk about it more seriously? And that's kind of like when the ball started rolling.
At that point, it took off. And I mean, it really took off. As alluded to when she not only talked with me, but given the final talk of the night at Run for the Border, Bradley started getting tweets where she was getting usual positive responses to what she created, but also weirdly positive reinforcing tweets such as, they would take a bullet for Lucky, one of the dinosaurs that was designed during the game jam.
Like, I'm not exaggerating when I said dozens and dozens of comments saying, I would die for Lucky, I would sell my soul for this game. Like, I get it's hyperbole, but holy shit, getting those comments in your inbox about it, like a little crappy doodle you did, is really intense. And I felt guilty about it as well. I was like, please don't take a bullet for this, you know?
But surely that was some twisted positive reinforcement in a way.
Oh, it was. Like, it was kind of like, okay, people really like this, you know? And when people really like it, they start doing fan art and they start, like, sharing it. And, you know, it was a good feeling. It was a weird feeling. It kind of felt undeserved because it was just one day's work. But I guess the idea just resonated with people. Like, people like me wanted a cute dinosaur game.
It was basically lightning in a bottle. Not just for Bradley, but for Italic Pig. But there might be another analogy to use too, according to Beamers.
If I can look at it like, you can change your lightning in a bottle to fire, starting a fire.
Okay.
Now, in some cases you can look at fire and say, lightning hits a tree and bang. That's your lightning in a bottle situation. That's your overnight success. That's your everything, you know, a thing happened that nobody expected and it exploded and stuff came out of it, right? The opposite side of fire is the amount of effort it takes to light a fire in the cold woods when you're by yourself or on an island, right? A fire can take effort, and fire can explode out of nowhere. And the only way we can look at this situation and say a fire started and nobody knew where it came from. If I were to look at it in hindsight, there's so many factors that join forces for this to go as smoothly as it has in the past year. And what I mean by that is, you know, if Jordan didn't have a lifelong love of dinosaurs, whether or not she would have drawn that in the first place, I don't know. Whether or not, but it certainly wasn't coming from a place of, dinosaurs are so hot right now, I'm going to draw something that's cute and hope the market takes it, which is where most companies come from.
Yeah.
A lot of companies go, oh yeah, that's big. I'm going to do another one of those and hope it works out. And that's not from a genuine place. So there's that. There's, you know, 10, 15, 24 years of being a dinosaur fan leading to that moment means she was perfectly suited to put that together. The fact that she was working with Italic Pig at the time on other projects, we had a talented team in place, perfectly suited to make the pieces in the amount of time that we had. It wasn't a mad scramble. It wasn't one person in a basement trying to figure it out. So if Jordan had been floating solo and drew that thing, who knows where it would have, it might have gone nowhere. It might have been a company comes in and grabs it and turn it into something she never would have anticipated in the first place. She might have hated it by the end. But we all saw what she was doing and we got behind that. I've been in the business for 7 years. I've gone to lots of events. I've met lots of people. We have a pretty decent reputation. We've gotten a couple of funds. So maybe that was an element of trustworthiness that allowed a company to like a regular corp, to look at us, do the due diligence, but also ask 3 or 4 trustworthy people and go, yeah, they're solid. They're good people and they're going to be around. So those few things, these histories that all kind of came together at that one point, that was where the lightning struck, but the fire wouldn't have lit if all those other pieces hadn't been in place around the outside. Or it would have been something completely different. So What I suppose I'm saying is that there's it's that whole years to come and overnight success kind of a thing. It's not to downplay anything that has been done, because it has been a surprise to all of us how fast and how smoothly this has gone from a sketch to a huge deal. It's unbelievable, and we're all still a little bit, we're all standing back waiting for the house of cards to blow over at any point, or holding our breath. But it's been a fantastic journey, and I think it would be amiss to assume it was 100% luck. There's a lot of backstory and a lot of joining of forces and a lot of alignment of planets that has caused this to become the wonder that it is.
But Paleoparian's existence may not have happened were it not for the fact that Bradley had suffered a bout of burnout as well as art block. After being encouraged by her friend, as she alluded to, she went to the Global Game Jam subsequently. And from there, everything kicked off.
I think about this every other week, about how I very almost didn't go to Game Jam because I was tired and I had art block and I was burnt out, and I didn't really feel good about anything I drew, so I was like, why would I go and put myself out there? And I wonder to this day, like, how would things be different right now if I decided I'm going to have a lion, I'm gonna play Animal Crossing this weekend. I have to wonder if, like, this wouldn't be a thing at all. And it's just that sheer randomness of that one day that just changed everything. It's really absurd. At the same time, to say that it was just one day, there are other elements, like the fact that I kind of had, I think at that point I had about 2,000 Twitter followers who were all sort of like, I drew a lot of dinosaurs, so it was the right audience, I suppose. And just kind of like, maybe at that time, cute dinosaurs was something people really resonated with. Like, there are different ingredients, I think, that kind of like came together in the right way, but the luck was just a major element, and it's something that I can't really describe. I can't really give anybody the answer to success because I don't know it.
It's a sort of butterfly effect in a way.
It really is. It surely is. I had always loved dinosaurs whenever I was but a fully fresh little baby. At 1 or 2 years old, my mom took me to a toy shop. And she was like, Jordan, you can choose any toy in this whole toy shop. And I made a beeline for this multicolored, multi-limbed, horrible dinosaur action figure. And it was from that moment my mom knew, okay, she's gonna turn out to be really weird. But, you know, 24 years later, you know, hasn't changed. And I think it's kind of like that sort of thing where it's like, you know, if you're doing something for yourself, it comes across as genuine. I think that's super cheesy, but, you know, there's something to that, I think.
Paleoparians became the biggest games production to come out of Northern Ireland because of funding from its now publisher, the Irregular Corporation, the publishing side of Mediatonic, the studio behind Murder by Numbers and the upcoming Fall Guys, as well as from Northern Ireland Screen, the country's media funding agency that's funded projects such as the Oscar-nominated Philomena, Line of Duty, Derry Girls, Natch, and probably the biggest entertainment property to ever be produced in Northern Ireland, and likely remain so for a generation at least, Game of Thrones.
In this space, and sort of leaping into that sort of public sector, most public funding bodies realise that games are a big business. They know that this is a valued sector. They just don't really get to grips with the idiosyncrasies and how to sort of navigate that landscape and who the sort of players are in that sort of space. They took a risk on me, big risk. And anybody who knows me, they can see how that goes. But one of the things that I distinctly remember when I applied, there was a marketing role and a digital executive role. And when I went to hand in my CV, they were like, oh, you're here for the marketing role? I was like, no, this is a digital thing. And they blew a folder, covered with dust. And I was like, there you go. So clearly nobody else applied. The lowest bar ever achieved. But anyway, when I sort of started, and this is a dangerous place to be when you go into any job where there's money to be deployed, I felt like, hey man, I had the power! Yeah. my job actually involved was being a digital pimp.
My name is Donald Phillips, and before this, I was the interactive executive at Northern Ireland Screen, which were where I helped games companies access the public funding through the Screen Fund, and then supported them in their international selling opportunities.
Phillips was one of four speakers at the event, alongside Bradley, Korea, and Pete McNally, a 3D artist at the Microsoft-owned renderware tools company Havoc. In his talk, which came after departing Northern Ireland Screen to subsequently join as the Interactive Business Manager for the Creative Industries at Queen's University in Belfast, Phillips talked of funding within Northern Ireland and his experiences from his time at NI Screen.
You know, my topic was really on the funding side of things. My role within funding was, we got to see a lot of projects at a very early stage, and we get to have conversations with people that on the finance side of projects that that are quite privileged, because normally we're not, we're there talking to people in a different power dynamic, where we get to have a sort of frank conversation about what they're looking for, what they're looking to invest into, and what their thought process is, and how we could align with what they're doing. So in terms of what the talk was about, it was trying to share the experience that I've had in those conversations, and then and hopefully give people a useful takeaway that allows them to navigate that process, because it's quite a critical part of the indie independent developer process, or even the startup game developer or whatever type of studio. That's early stage, you're talking to financiers and funders and commercial partners, and it can, it's the very hard part of the business. It's the make and break bit of it. So, and it can be quite a heartbreaking sort of process. So it's just trying to, give people an insight into what that world was like, and just how that sort of develops.
But one other crucial aspect of funding in the Irish games industry for both North and South outside of publishing deals comes from Creative Europe. Creative Europe helps not only fund the transport for both North and South contingents to attend Run for the Border, but has also provided funding for projects from both Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland.
Hi, how are you? So I'm Orla from Creative Europe Desk Ireland, so I'm based in Dublin. And
hi, I'm Rosie from Creative Europe Desk UK, and I'm based in Belfast. Woo!
So part of the reason, it's perfect time really for this event to be happening for us, because there is a deadline coming up for video games development funding, and the deadline is 12th February.
Yeah, so a couple weeks.
So you've got a few weeks, if anybody's thinking about it. So it's for development of games and not production development, so it out of a narrative game is the important thing to remember there. So I can get up to 150,000 euros. So it is and it's a grant, it's not a loan, and they do want to give it to you, so it's like it's just about the application. So there's a pretty dense application. I think there's a few in the room who have gone through it before. But there are great benefits to it, and so and we are here. So if anybody wants to ask us about it or talk to us about it, just come up to us and we have cards so you can get in contact with us afterwards. And you do a few weeks. Yes.
3 weeks.
Which is a good
time.
Good.
Yeah. Start tomorrow morning.
But yeah, and I just want to say thanks to Kevin and Gang of Emirates and Games on Iron as well for bringing this together. Since we're working with it, so
definitely.
So,
I'm Rosie Legorsmer and I work at the Creative Europe Desk UK as a manager for both the culture and media sub-programmes in Northern Ireland.
Being in Europe.
and beyond 2020. Hopefully we'll still be part of the programme, although I don't think it's very high up his to-do list, so we'll see. Why now? Why you can?
Creative Europe has been funding projects across both North and South. The recipients last year were Northern-based Outsider Games and the Southern-based Spooky Doorway. One previous recipient included Italic Pig, who got a grant twice from Creative Europe UK for Mona Lisa and the Infinite Hotel, respectively. Ligars Mayor details how the relationship and the collaborations between both the UK and Irish offices work.
Creative Europe, obviously it's the EU programme, so whenever people apply to the programme, it goes straight to the kind of office in Brussels, essentially, and they do all the kind of assessments and they give out all the grants. Now, what we do is the Creative Europe desk is really separate, so we're like not decision makers. Our role is to help people apply, so we want to promote the programme, get it out there to as many people. We're there to support people in their applications, you know, like answer questions and, you know, check they've got the right documents in order. And then we also kind of run events to create awareness of the funds and awareness of what Creative Europe is doing in general. So every country that takes part in Creative Europe has a desk. So in the UK, we have a desk with representatives in Belfast, Edinburgh, Manchester, Cardiff and London. And in Dublin, they have a presence in Ireland, in Dublin and in Galway. So that's basically how it works. And then we do things joined up, obviously, because we are so close to our neighbours down south. There's a lot of shared like knowledge and a similar context people are working in, and that's not just for games development, that's like across the board for everything that Creative Europe does. So it's a kind of natural partnership that we would exchange information and we would do things kind of in partnership. So that's basically how it works. So yes, Orla, who's the media desk down south, and myself, throughout the year we would do like different things in collaboration and like supporting Run for the Border as one of them.
I'm going to bring up two people who just got it in the 2019 round, one from North, one from South. We've got Stephen Downey from Outsider Games and Dave McCabe from Spooky Doorway. Come on up.
Yeah, we got 140,000 euros from Creative Europe this year. Well, it's come up on the way. Hopefully. No, so we got 70% up front and get the rest at the end. So there's that little, as long as we're still sort of signed up without Brexit, we'll get that little end part. Hopefully, in the last third of the money.
It'll be fine, yeah.
It'll be fine. So I haven't gotten emails from the British government saying, "Are you Stephen Downey from Outsider Games?" I was like, "Oh, it's like, yeah, we're going to give you that money if you don't get it from them. Give us more details." So, I mean, they always do their promises, don't they? Like, the British government are always keeping their promises for stuff, so as long as it all goes well. So what we got it for our narrative game, Tax Force, which is about tax avoiding mutants in space. It's at a very early stage, but I'll talk more about the application after the review.
Hello, I have lost my voice because of the rock and roll lifestyle of an indie developer. My name is Dave McCabe from Spooky Doorway. Although it's got a nice kind of creepy vibe to it. Maybe I'll share some beat bones I've written with you guys. We actually received the money in the 2018 round. So we have gotten the money and we're a couple of steps ahead of where Stephen is. For our game Sunken Spectre, which is about, it's a deep sea diving adventure game about investigating ghosts and shipwrecks and mythology deep under the sea. Yeah. So we're a bit further on with that, and after Stephen talks about the paperwork, I'm going to talk about what that money is actually. Hold on. Thank you, darling, for that medicinal Guinness.
As alluded to at the start, we're officially out. Brexit has happened. And although we're in a transition period where we still have the benefits of being a member of the European Union, the UK is no longer officially a member. The final chapter will happen at the end of 2020, specifically December 31st at 11 PM GMT, midnight Central European Time on January 1st, 2021, when the transition period officially ends and we are out from the EU, assuming that there's no such extension in light of what's going on. The only land border between the UK and EU will be between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, but things are also complicated thanks to the delicacy of things in both countries' borders being open to each other in light of the 1998 Good Friday Agreement 22 years ago. Considering the ease there is in getting across to one another, there is still that fear that the openness that was there before and still is now will be made more difficult with a return to either closed borders or even checkpoints. As unlikely as that latter aspect is anyway, taking us back to the peak of the troubles back in Northern Ireland. It would make running events like Run for the Border, although not impossible, a lot harder to do from a logistical sense. Not to mention the funding side of things too. The one thing that unites everyone that I speak to on that front is that there's no unified answer on what to expect from Brexit and how it will affect the two countries' game development communities.
I'm certainly not qualified enough to answer that question on behalf of Games NI. I mean, I've got my opinions. Everyone will have their own opinions on the whole thing. I am the sort of person that believes that the... No, if I start going down this route, I may abstain from answering this question.
I have no idea. It's, like you said, it is an abyss. It's just kind of like, I have no idea what to expect.
There's a couple of nightmare scenarios that probably nobody wants to talk about.
Yeah, I think someone was watching the news and they were like, you know what? I would give anything to stop hearing about Brexit all day, every day. I am done with this. And then Monkey's Paw kind of was like, okay.
Truly devil's advocate.
There's an inconvenience, to put it in the lightest possible sense, that Brexit will cause. There'll be issues for transfer, issues for free market, issues for hiring, or you know, it may mess up the ability for us to get creative here. But will something else end up in its place? I don't know. But if I were to put this in general terms, it goes right in line with everything I've said all the way along, and I'm of the belief that. That no borders are a better thing. Putting a border up between North and South will simply just raise that same, any sort of fear of the unknown that we may have had before this. I would say, you know, if I were to go back 5 years and think about the two industries, the South thought that the North is piles of money and they're all about commercial, and then North looks at the South and say, oh, you're all suffering from your art and you're all, you know, you want to struggle, you don't want to make money, whatever. It's like there might have been that kind of thing that happens because you only bump into them twice a year. And so while this event is about at the very least, if everybody goes home and goes, wow, you're just like me, then we've got something to talk about. As soon as you got a border and a problem and something that's going to separate us, it's not the solution.
The immediate, the biggest concern was, you know, there's obviously a lot of people who work, who are like, you know, from across the border and work on one side of the border or the other, and because the UK has like this agreement with Ireland in terms of like free movement and stuff, that's not affected. So, because, you know, technically that would be like non-EU citizen, or like an EU citizen working in a non-EU country, but there's not going to be any restrictions on that, which was sort of the main, I imagine that was the biggest issue for a lot of businesses in Northern Ireland. But in terms of that, Creative Europe as well, being sort of pulled out of the UK is not great crack.
And thus, we hit the second biggest factor towards the Northern Irish games industry, and how Brexit will affect it. A few weeks after I spoke with Rosie Lagarsmere of Creative Europe UK, the UK government published its mandate for negotiations with EU for what its aims are in the divorce deal. One of which was a pretty clear suggestion that the UK government would not take part in Creative Europe's next media programme that was due to start in January 2021. To be clear, any developer who applied for funding as part of this year's games programme will still get funding not only as part of the transition period, but also continue to receive that funding after the transition period ends, as it got the funding grant when the UK was still in the transition period. Still with me? Good. I'll let Lagarsmere explain it in more detail.
So with Creative Europe, it's one of the programmes that is included in the transition period. So the UK is still considered basically the same in the programme as it was before. So UK organisations can apply for calls throughout 2020 and they can be successfully awarded grants, and then the grants can be paid for the lifetime of their project. So say, for example, a video developer applies for the latest deadline in February and they're successful, but they're obviously their development's going to go beyond the end of 2020. They can still receive payments after that date as long as the grant was awarded, like within the transition period.
To be absolutely clear here, this withdrawal applies just for Northern Ireland. For the Republic of Ireland, who is its own country and still maintains membership of the EU, just to put that out there, Creative Europe Ireland will still provide grants for games development within the Free State beyond 2021. But with Creative Europe UK now a non-starter for funding games in NI, it pulls away one of the biggest funding avenues for games development in Northern Ireland. The one big takeaway for absolute certain is that we are now very much in the unknown.
If we've got a very physically hard border with infrastructure and things like that, even getting across the border would be difficult. I don't think we're going to go to anywhere near anything like that. So I think in practical terms, having events like that will still continue. You know, I think the Northern Ireland and the UK are an exporting nation. I think there's a lot of political posturing going on, and I think no matter what happens, there will still be trade and investment and all those sorts of activities. It's fulfilling. I think what's actually going to happen is going to be some red tape in around a lot of areas. I think probably Northern Ireland is going to get the brunt of that by the looks of things, but there's not going to be insurmountable challenges. I think the biggest impediment to cross-border collaboration, the games industry is really international anyway. It's used to dealing with these things on a large scale. I think larger corporates are more used to working across borders and regions and things like that. So I think once things are settled and people know the lay of the land, there will be opportunities that come out of that. What they'll be, nobody can really tell. I think there's going to be disadvantages. Losing access to freedom of movement is going to be a big one. Games are, it's a people-driven industry. It's people that make them. Everybody needs more expertise, and there's definitely expertise gaps that we've got in both regions that we could really do with filling. So, I think Northern Ireland is going to be at a bit of a disadvantage if they can't get the right people here. We definitely saw investment opportunities disappear because of Brexit. Studios leave, conversations around potential studios setting up just totally stop. So I'm hoping that once these things are resolved, that there's a certainly amount those things can start to happen again, and there's a bit more clarity around it. But I think it's bred a lot of uncertainty. There's still a lot of detail to be worked out. I think maybe where there's people's one thing, the other one is really the data, the movement of data. That might be massively problematic as well. So nobody really knows. Like, again, it all circle around a lot. One thing we do probably have in our favor, the game sector in Northern Ireland works quite closely with UKI, certainly in terms of feeding into some other bits, but UKI is the trade association, UK Interactive Entertainment Trade Association. Mm. And they are campaigning and are pretty good, effective at lobbying for on government initiatives. And so we sort of look to them to say, look, this is what, where the stance is on Brexit, how we all overcome some of these issues. But it's you know, it's not without its challenges.
A lot has happened between January and now post-run for the border in Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. And I don't just mean with the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. Just before Run for the Border, the Northern Irish government, or in local terms, the Northern Irish Assembly, reassembled after 3 years away as Arlene Foster of the Democratic Unionist Party, the DUP, and Michelle O'Neill of Sinn Féin restored power as First Minister and Deputy First Minister due to a 2017 scandal involving Foster that's all dissolved. Meanwhile, in the Republic, the recent general election saw the ruling Fine Gael and Taoiseach, or Prime Minister for those without an understanding of the Irish language, Leo Varadkar, lose power of the Irish government thanks to a hung government that saw Sinn Féin and Fianna Fáil stand out as the parties with the biggest gains, while Fine Gael came third. Varadkar resigned as Taoiseach and as leader of Fine Gael, but due to the hung parliament result, as well as the COVID-19 pandemic, he currently remains in charge as caretaker Taoiseach of the Republic of Ireland. These are uncertain times in Ireland, with massive political landscape shifting in both countries and Brexit, as well as what's currently happening with the coronavirus.
Politics are always going to be there, and that's always going to be, that's going to change with the wind. And I think the challenges here, and you know, this is something that Northern Ireland Screening, you know, when I was at Northern Ireland Screening, we were speaking to international business, the thing that they would always flag up straight away was like, well, this is a policy initiative that's great now, but you only work on a 4-year cycle. And that's the way governments work. So, you know, every 4 or 5 years, the thing's going to change. And I don't think companies or businesses can sort of sit back and go, okay, this is, you know, we're going to respond to the political wind. It's a case of them, they need to be proactive and be thinking, right, what are the next 5, 10, 15 years like, and just keep building their studio and their ambition on that premise. And initiatives will come and go and they can take advantage of them or do whatever, but if they kind of stick to their core business and start to and focus on growing that, I think that's the only protection they have against that, but it's also their most appropriate choice of action. And I think where the likes of Creative Europe, or, you know, Northern Ireland Screening, those sorts of bodies, you know, those initiatives come around when they come around, or if they're still going, they're looking for good opportunities. And if you can present a good opportunity to those sorts of organisations, they'll get behind you. And it's up to you then, up to the businesses then, to take advantage of that. But, you know, there's going to be challenges, there's going to be headwinds, but those are distractions, I suppose, and easy to kind of go, oh, yes, I get caught up into that a little bit. You know, you don't really know, you don't have a huge amount of control over it. If people are interested in that sort of lobbying, you can get involved and start to lobby, and there is business groups and cohorts and things like that are out there. It gets a bit murky, I suppose, when you get into that sort of space. But that's a sign of, I think that will eventually be a sort of sign of a maturing industry in the region. But, you know.
Just sort of hope springs eternal?
No, definitely not that. It's more a case of, you know, you got to plan and build your business around your core, and the political landscape will change and move around that. But if your business foundations are sound, you will continue, you know, your business will continue to grow. I think it's great that there is support available for things like Creative Europe and things like that, but if they weren't there, you know, the sector and the industry needs to find its own way to kind of make these things happen. So as a great example, there was an initiative called Games Ireland a couple of years ago, which had some industry buy-in at a very high level to run a sort of event. I think there was a bit of a push and lobbying for a video games tax relief in the Republic of Ireland. It didn't quite work, and I think it sort of died away, but I think that was it was a shame they sort of didn't continue on that initiative. But so I think it's that sort of thing that you just sort of needs persistence. But it's you know, that's a landscape that's always ever evolving, and you know, that's every business has that sort of challenge, and it doesn't you kind of have to center yourself and not be blown away in the wind.
The one thing we've been taught to believe, like with everything that has happened recently, is regardless of the political landscape and regardless of what's happening outside, there's no telling what the next day, week, or month will bring, as Potts mentions.
I think in terms of just, it's this time next month, we can't even really begin to picture what things are going to look like in a month's time compared to now. Like, this time last month, you know, who would have thought that things would be the way they are now? Like, when I was in hospital with my kidney stuff, which is why we're doing this interview several weeks after Run for the Border has actually happened. But, like, I remember all the news about that was, like, it was all about, like, the Brighton super spreader cluster at that point, and, like, that guy coming back into the UK and spreading it to, like, 8 people. And that was it. That was kind of it. That seemed at that time like, all right, sweet, they've locked it down, that's it. And then Italy and half term happened, and that's now here we are. So yeah, who knows what it's going to be like in a month.
For the Irish games industry as a whole, and you may notice this has been covered from a purely Northern Irish perspective, at least, if not most of it, although this is something that this is going to be revisited down the line for our Southern friends. At Run for the Border, I got the sense that there is definitely more to do in bringing both communities together, but the camaraderie in the room is very positive, encouraging, jovial, and happy. Here's Donal Phillips again.
You know, I know I've spoken to developers who are and studios that are looking to set up, and they see Ireland and North and South as an opportunity. So it's just timing around some of these things. But you know, I think it's just a very accessible place. I don't think there is a silver bullet. I think it's just things will keep growing and chipping away, and then you know they'll be looking back, and you know, some of these studios and the studios will evolve, the talent and people that come through the doors will sort of evolve and start up their own things, and there'll be more studios or different studios, it'll just sort of evolve into a sort of pretty good way. Well, I hope it does. I hope it continues to evolve.
I think both groups have the same goals. They want sharing of information, sharing of advice, sharing of skills. Together is better. Collaboration is better than competition. Those sorts of things are the moral goals of the organizations, as I understand them. There are financial ones, and there are regional. The definition of a cluster, the ability to bring in funding to an area, the ability for a body like Yuki or Taiga, who are for them to listen to us as a group because we're organized. There's those benefits as well, but quite honestly, the majority of what we do at Games NI is we stop bad things from happening that never do. You know, we talk about how we can avoid the community taking a downturn or a, you know, that's sort of the wrong way of putting it. Most of the time what we are doing is positive reinforcement of working together. So we do a lot of talks, we do a lot of sharing of skills, we do a lot of this sort of presentation stuff. And hands up the industry leaders helping the noobs and the noobs helping out the students and that kind of a thing. We're building a chain where if one person succeeds, then the region succeeds.
Basically passing it down.
Passing down knowledge. We didn't get here ourselves, and as a result, we're happy to help you up with us. So there's this whole... there's a bunch of different levels, but we don't see them as levels. It's just like I have contacts that you might need. You have talent that I might need. That's, you know, I've got a person who... We're coming to the end of a project, and the project is... I'm going to have to get rid of three of my artists. Will anyone take them? Because they're reliable, and we don't want them to leave the region and head off to London and just end up working for a mill somewhere. So, yeah, it's about... Together is better. Collaboration is better than competition.
In terms of Northern Ireland's game sector, it's only going to continue to get bigger. Here's Rosie Lagarsmere from Creative Europe UK again.
Well, from what I can say, it seems like it's thriving. I mean, there's like, you know, there's a creative hub, the Normal Bobs. There's lots of companies and interest and stuff there. You know, it seems like the games network has really, really grown. Like, there was like, you know, well over 100 people in the last Games NI meetup that I went to. It seems like, yeah, there's interest in work coming out and interest in ideas. So, yeah, I'd say like it looks healthy, and I don't see any reason why it couldn't continue to be so.
Johnny, we are at the start of a new decade, and it's gonna, like, it's gonna get big from here on out. There is, I can see an anchor studio really wanting to settle here. Like, I can really see them do it, especially when, after Brexit happens, given the proximity of, like, Northern Ireland to, you know, say they set up in Belfast and Dublin's just 2 hours away. That is the, like, that's like a potentially advantageous possible benefit to this entire clusterfuck that is Brexit, if we are trying to look for silver linings. But just whether or not, you know, depends what coronavirus does now, you know, at that point. So yeah, it's all good.
Going back to that point of collaboration that Beamers mentions, Jordan Bradley cites how each other wants to see each other succeed. For if anyone succeeds, everyone succeeds.
I think being here at this event, you will kind of get the feeling of it just by being here. It's quite palpable, I guess. You can see everybody's rallying behind the success, because, you know, a success in small indie game circles is, it feels like a success for the whole community. And I think, you know, building that community, we want to see each other succeed, and we love hearing those stories, and we love sort of like hearing about that, because at the end of the day, like, indie games is tough, and, you know, it's all too often that you hear about the bad things, you know, like crunch and delays, not being able to be funded, really brilliant minds not being fully realized. It's a tricky subject, and I think, like, the only way to get past that is by looking at, you know, what have we achieved so far. This event is one of them. I think it can only grow from here. It's obvious that, you know, the tickets almost sell out every time. The room's packed. There's not enough seats for everybody. There's not enough pizza for everybody, you know. That is such a good thing, because it means that, you know, people are coming to this event, and they're excited, and they're hyped, and they're attentive. And I think that is a good indicator. People are keen for this, and that can only grow from here, I think.
How can you see it growing? Like, in what shape and form can you realistically see that growing?
I have to wonder if you could expand sort of like the content of it. So I know we have talks and networking, but what if we had sort of like mini game jams where North and South came together, or workshops, or even just like having this event more often? I know that's a whole lot of work with organisation, but the reward is far greater, I find.
Mm.
There's many ways I can see it changing, even just online. Let's make a Discord server where we all come together, because there's one for NI Game Dev, there's one for, you know, Down South Game Dev. Why not have a sort of all together one? That would be cool.
Like an All-Ireland Discord,
I guess. Something like that. I don't know.
As I alluded to earlier, there has been a significantly heavy slant towards Northern Ireland in this podcast. And it is something I will revisit for our Southern brethren down the line once everything calms down with the pandemic. But here's the thing. In regards to the games industry, the Irish are already here. Yes, the studios making landfalls such as Larian, Riot, Romero Games, and even the likes of EA and Blizzard. And that's utterly fantastic, and it's vindication that Ireland can be a hotbed for the industry. But you look at the likes of homegrown studios such as Italic Pig, White Pod Studios, Hypixel, Coffee Box Games, Farfew Giants, Outsider Games, Spooky Doorway to name a few studios. Talents such as Jordan Bradley, Vicky Potts, Adam Whiteside, Kiva Roddy, Aaron Donaghy, Kitty Crawford, Sean Murray, the list goes on and on and on. And that's without referencing legends such as Dave Perry or Phil Campbell. It's even stretching as far as outside the dev scene. The likes of Claire Sharkey, Pete Chapman, Aoife Wilson, Vic Hood, Danny O'Dwyer, myself, etc, 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 and so on, so forth. The list goes on. The underlying point to this story, Brexit or no Brexit, whether in Ireland or outside of it, and regardless of discipline, there is one massive takeaway to all of this. We're not here to take over. We've already taken. Press Play is hosted, written, and produced by me, Johnny Cullen. What's the crack, lad? Special thanks to Aaron Donaghy and the Hytale development team at Hypixel for letting me come down with them to Dundalk for Run for the Border, as well as Vicky Potts. Press Play is a podcast by PlayDiaries.com, a website that focuses on telling interesting and unique stories about video games on both the AAA and indie level, as well as culturally, and taking a look at them in a different, critical way. We're now planning the next batch of episodes for Press Play, as this is the end of the first few episodes we had planned since Play Diaries launch. For more details on when to expect those, you can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Play Diaries. You can also support us by becoming a patron to our Patreon at patreon.com/playdiaries. $2 a month gets you in the ground level, but $4 a month gets you 24-hour exclusivity on every new episode of every future Play Diaries podcast, such as new episodes of Press Play when they arrive, as well as new episodes of my favourite game before they go live publicly on Play Diaries. Every dollar is truly appreciated, as it helps firm up future plans that are currently in the works for the site. And for more stuff like this in future, both in podcast and written form, visit PlayDiaries.com. Thanks very much for listening.